Hi everyone, welcome to Taz Talk, the show where we talk about the Adventure Zone podcast. I'm recovering from the flu, so if I sound a little grumbly, I apologize.
This whole month is just all of my favorite people getting sick and
yeah, it's recording been pretty podcasts. Rough.
Yeah. That flu season, man.
I know, it's crazy. We got an epidemic down here in I don't know if it's all of California or is it just like...
I think it's all of California.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, as a public health nurse and registered nurse, yeah, it's basically the entire United States, but...
Okay, gotcha. Yikes. Well, anyway, today, on a lighter topic, we're going to be talking about episode 3 of Taz Amnesty. It is episode 3, right?
I think so. Pretty sure. Yeah, cool. It's episode 3, yeah. We know what we're doing. We definitely know what we're doing.
Okay. Did Griffin basically admit that he came up with this story a year ago?
Essentially. I think I vaguely recall in TTAZZ when they were talking about things they wanted to do after the balance arc. They were saying that they were having, you know, a couple things stewing and that they had ideas on their mind. I have a feeling that each one of them probably has like a couple of things that they're working on, with some things having more priority than others. Because I do know that we've talked about it before, that Griffin wanted to do like a Persona era or like a Persona style kind of game. And that could have just been because Persona 5 came out and he was like super inspired by it. But I don't know that he's let on about this particular game very specifically before. So yeah, he's at least had the skeleton or at least the name Sylvain in his head for at least a year.
Right. Yep. Yeah, I don't know anything about Persona.
Oh, it's fun. Related at all to this podcast. but I would recommend it, and I could see why Griffin would want to maybe utilize it, because it's fun.
Okay.
Real quick, I just mention, I still really like the theme song, and I realize I think it's because the fiddle and the banjo... Like, that really gets me. I noticed that I think what really makes the Amnesty theme kind of endearing is that it's using, like, actual instrument sounds instead of more, like, synth or like, mechanical kind of sounds. It sounds really organic. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it really drives home. That was, like, my first note. And I was like, I gotta say it because it's music.
Yeah, I think it fits the sort of down-home tone of the show.
Something about a banjo really brings it home.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about the name Sylvain.
Ooh, okay.
Basically, the word Sylvain kind of shares a root with the word Sylvan, which is a word that means relating to woods and forests. And the word sylphs... is a word that was coined by the alchemist Paracelsus to describe air elementals in his sort of theory of, like, the four elements and ethereal creatures and such. Mm. And the word sylph is believed to be a portmanteau of nympha sylvestris, which translates to forest nymph. And the word sylphs later on in, like, theater and literature kind of became synonymous with fairies. Mm. Which, in European mythology, fairies are kind of, like, sort of cast in with elves as creatures that live in, like, this other world. Mm-hmm. Sort of like Sylvain in this fiction. So I thought all of that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. I was expecting, you know, when they were talking about setting up the campaign, they were talking about cryptids. So I'm fascinated that it took this kind of a twist. And I did also want to mention, Mama and Barclay were talking about how sometimes gates from Sylvain open, and they don't know why, but sometimes they open in, like, the human realm, and when they do, like, abominations happen, or they are summoned. And I just wanted to mention that is pretty Cthulhu. Like, that's an eldritch kind of a thing. There is a game called Arkham... Nope, it's an Arkham game, but it's called Eldritch Horrors. And one of the mechanics of that game is that sometimes the result of something bad happening in the game is that these cosmic gates open in different cities around the world. And anytime those gates are opened, but basically an abomination appears. And you as a player have to go out and kill those monsters before they wreak havoc. So, I think maybe, like, at first I was like, is this gonna have a Cthulhu twist? Like, are we gonna have, like, some deep ones who are in Sylvain, like, pulling strings and stuff? But it doesn't really have that kind of feeling about it. Like, it doesn't feel like a cosmic horror kind of story. It just maybe is borrowing this element. Because it's a cool way of making like a reason for monsters to suddenly appear in these places where they can interact with characters. I think it's really neat. I think it's pretty cool.
Well, it's different than the direction I thought it was going. So if you remember last time, I was saying like, oh, I bet the gimmick here is that like some cryptid from Sylvain, which I didn't know the name of yet, is going to get trapped in the human world, and then they're gonna have to go like rescue them, but it's not necessarily gonna be like killing a monster. That was my whole Undertale theory, which I think
Oh
we can say
yeah.
has had a hole put in it at this point, because
Yeah, I'm
it
not
seems like what they
sure.
need to do is like, if there are these abominations that appear when the gate appears, then it seems like they have to go kill this thing.
So, hold on. I have a theory. When the bobcat was, I guess I have a feeling like it was kind of already dead. Like when it was being described, it kind of reminded me of, and I don't know how caught up you are with Pokemon, but there's a Pokemon
Not at
called,
all.
okay, I'm just gonna explain it. But there's a Pokemon called Mimikyu, which is basically like a ghost
I
type
know that
Pokemon.
though.
Okay, great. So in my head, like the bobcat and all, like the bear, like any of these individual animals that are appearing, but they appear dead, but they're like reanimated dead. I kind of envision them to be sort of like Mimikyu, where it's like they're being possessed by something inside of them that's using them like as a jacket.
I don't
So,
think they're supposed to be cute,
well,
though.
I kind of really want to draw it just because I envision like this like reanimated, like it's an animal, but its eyes are kind of like glazed over, and it's kind of like got its mouth and tongue out like bleh. But like if you look closely in the body, maybe there are like some shadowy eyes peering out because it's Mimikyu. But that being said, when the bobcat was struck down, it like something kind of oily like escaped from it, right? And when Duck was in the forest and fighting this thing, there was oil and like blackness inking out of it and stuff. So in my head, I was thinking, well, maybe it's kind of like Spirited Away. Sam's bringing in all of these nerd references. But in Spirited Away, Haku the dragon has this like curse in him, and when he's cured of the curse, he spits out this black inky like thing. It's like the physical manifestation of the curse. And Chihiro has to like step on it, and then she has to purify herself from the curse. So for me, what I'm kind of expecting this abomination to be, it's not these animals that are like being turned evil, like how Duck was kind of getting angry and put into a rage. I think that these animals were hunted by this like creature that is the black inkiness that is like possessing and absorbing all of these things. So maybe, yeah, maybe like they don't have to kill the animals because I guess they're already kind of dead. But maybe they have to like find the abomination monster and like contain it, or maybe they have to kill it, but I have a feeling maybe it's not killable. I don't know. You could still have your pacifism route. They might just have to get there by like knocking it out, kind of like in Pokemon.
Well, here's what's weird is that I thought when so the this arc starts off being introduced as like Monster of the Week, and Griffin said he wanted it to be about cryptids, and that makes sense. It's like, oh, every like arc, like every like sub arc, I don't know how to describe this, every chapter they would face off against a different cryptid. And then when the Amnesty Lodge got explained, and it was like, oh, all the cryptids are actually like people and they're here in disguise, then it's like, oh, well, if they have to fight like, or if they have to face off with a different cryptid every time, then maybe the gimmick is that they like have to like help them and then bring them to the lodge. But if
Oh.
so the if the it sounded like I kind of I listened to the episode twice actually, but I kind of glazed over it the second time. But it sounded like Mama was talking about I think it was Mama who was talking about this. The abominations are like a phenomenon that occurs around the gates, right? But the abomination does not sound like, oh, it's just a cryptid. It's like a separate established thing. And so are they going to be fighting these abominations every time instead?
I think...
like that...
yeah.
That didn't seem... it was a lot different than what I was expecting.
Yeah. I guess if that is what it ends up being... it's a nice kind of twist on, you know, the monster movie kind of way that media usually tries to approach cryptids. Instead of, like, hunting them or instead of driving them away, like, they're just kind of living co-simpatico, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. These abominations appearing every time a gate appears is a nice way to say, okay, there's another gate in this other place, or there's some spooky stuff happening, I bet it's a gate. Like, I can pretty easily imagine a TV show where that is all they're doing, is they're going around closing the gates and, like, finding or fending off the abominations. I mean, if the name of what they are is abomination, I assume that they're bad, like, inherently bad.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah. So I guess it is different from what I expected. But I think it's a promising premise, if that's what it is. Go ahead. You go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that, like, unless the abominations have a lot of variety, it wouldn't really feel like Monster of the Week. It would just be like, are they all a weird big ink monster? Or is it like, I don't know, I'm kind of... curious to see where this is going.
Yeah, like, what if it's what if some of them aren't all, you know, evil or malicious? Like, what if some of them are sentient and they're like, you know, abomination, it's kind of a judgy name for what we are. I think we're just kind of cryptids like everybody else. Like, we haven't really seen any signs of, like, intellect. All we've seen is, like, hunger and rage, because that's kind of the only big bads we've seen Griffin be able to produce. jokes, those, that's a joke. But anyway, I think you're right. Like, it is interesting. I want to know more about the potential of what this creature is. What more can we kind of expect from Sylvain? Because we've seen that there are, other creatures of intellect in Sylvain. Vincent? I think Vincent's character is really neat. Let's talk about him for a little bit.
Let's talk about him, because the Goatman is an actual cryptid, and I tried to look up about him, or it, as it were, but a lot of those stories are really gruesome, and it's like a weird thing where I'm thinking, like, if Griffin's basing this story on a bunch of cryptids, like, that's super fun, but it's weird to then try to look up information about some of these, like, essentially horror stories. And I read, like, a really creepy Goatman creepypasta.
It
was, like, it put a like, I kind of, like, paused the episode to go do a little research, and it, like, I got back into the episode, and it kind of, like, changed the tone for me a little bit. But like, it was really weird.
It wasn't just, like, knitting scarves or anything?
No, definitely not.
Ooh, interesting.
But, I mean, it's still, like, you know, people love Bigfoot, even though, like, it's one of those things where, like, these monsters are, they're scary because we don't, you know, it's just like a fear of the unknown kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, most of those, I think most of the Bigfoot, like, lore is just like, oh, you saw this creature in the distance, but you don't know anything about it, and that's what makes it scary.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it doesn't have to be scary.
Yeah.
Especially because I adore Barclay.
Yeah, he definitely doesn't seem scary.
I love when Griffin said he put his seatbelt on because he's a very safe boy.
Yes! Oh, I chuckled.
Adorable.
I loved it. I really liked the visual of Vincent nibbling the pencil and then looking sheepish or goatish, as it were. I think that was, like, my favorite. I also just wanted to throw out there, when Clint was like, it's a pan.
Yeah, chuckled. That was cute. I wonder, Vincent very briefly mentioned that resources are scarce in Sylvain.
Yeah.
So I'm curious about that, and I'm also trying to figure out what the fuck's up with the whole, like, oh, you gotta wear a piece of clothes or you'll be irrationally angry here.
Yeah, I thought that
that's a weird,
interesting
conceit.
Yeah. I don't know that I've ever heard that in, like, a story or a fable before. It sounds vaguely familiar. It sounds like a thing that I would be like, yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Well, it's kind of like...
Go ahead.
There's a recurring trope in mythology where if you go to the underworld or fairyland and you eat a piece of food there, then you can't leave.
Yeah, I was about to say that. Again, from Spirited Away, when Chihiro has to eat the bun so that she doesn't, like, fade away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I've never heard of something, like, protecting you, like, with a garb. And that just could be in my very limited scope of mythology and media, as it were. But have you?
I haven't heard anything like that either, but it's, like, really weird. There's a lot of weird stuff got introduced in this episode that I'm, like, very curious to see how it's going to resolve itself into the, like, a coherent picture, I guess.
Yeah. We were kind of wondering, like, how long this was going to be, but it sounds like the boys would really like these mini arcs to be, like, 5 episodes. That's what it seems to be shaping up to be. So if this is episode 3 for them, then they have 2 more episodes to kind of, like, finish up this big boss battle. I have a feeling that this is the big bad. I can't imagine that they would have time to introduce and fight another big thing. And then they have time to kind of, you know, deconstruct, like, what just happened and maybe even kind of set up the premise of what would happen next.
Yeah. I mean, this is definitely the big bad because, as Griffin said, this isn't D&D where you fight a bunch of grunts and mini bosses. Like, there is one monster running around in the woods that you have to deal with.
One monster and 3 bobcats that are actually just, like, extensions of the same monster. That's true.
There was a mini boss. man.
I like that they're all together now. And we get to see their different character dynamics fleshed out. I think it's really fun.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to mention we had a couple of feelings about the Fate system and how the Fate system handled battles. And now we've seen a true battle with all the characters and one big bad here with Monster of the Week. Do you have any thoughts?
Oh yeah, I was wondering whether we were going to, like, talk about this again. I just it's wanted pretty to much, like, the touch same on thing. It
like a little bit. Yeah. But we had a lot of opinions about the Fate system's battle system. But Monster of the Week, it really is basically the same thing. Where Griffin didn't explain it like it was, but basically, like, you take turns and you're kind of, the action kind of dictates, well, who goes next. I think the difference, and maybe what makes it easier for me to digest in a podcast form, is that you don't have to pick, necessarily, you don't have to pick something that happens to the environment or something that happens to your target as a result of an action that you're taking upon it. And this is kind of going pretty nitty-gritty into the commitment battles, but every time, like, you would strike a character, or every time you would attack a boss or something, you would also include, like, an extra condition that the target takes, or, like, an attribute. And I think that for me as a player and as a podcast listener, I couldn't follow it as much. So even just without that one step, like, this seems a bit more straightforward, where you're taking an action, your target reacts, and then you react again to your target's reaction.
It still feels a little clunky to me, and I think there's, like, 2 reasons for that reaction, and one of them is that Dungeons & Dragons is exactly like every video game RPG that we've ever played. So it's like we're all already very familiar with turn-based combat. Excuse me one second. Okay. We're all very familiar with turn-based combat, with status effects, with HP, with, you know, like, a weapon attack, magic spell. All that stuff is very, like, JRPG standard. So I think it's very easy for people to come into it and follow along if they're, like video games at all.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing is that, like, when they started off balanced, they were doing, like, it's weird listening to them go through combat in this system now. I realized, like, I forget, it was some line where Griffin was saying something like, he said something happened and he was explaining, like, this isn't, like, this is just, like, a soft action. Yeah, it's just, like, me introducing some danger. And it's, like, I realize, like, once he feels like he's past the point where he has to explain that stuff, I think combat would flow a lot more smoothly.
Yeah.
But it's, like, he still has to explain that stuff. And at the beginning of Balance, they were like fumbling their way through the D&D rules too, because they didn't know how to play yet, and it was like the same thing. But at that point, nobody had any expectations about the show, and like they didn't have any expectations, so they were just like, that was the time for them to kind of like fumble around with the rules. And now we're at a point where it's like, you know, having listened to all of Balance, I have to remind myself, like, that's where we are back here right now. And like, yeah, it's going to be clunky listening to them figure out how to play and like explain it to themselves and to the audience.
Yeah. And I think I was, it's funny that you mentioned clunkiness, because that's what I was about to mention about maybe why I kind of like the Monster of the Week, the Powered by the Apocalypse system of how they do battles. Just because, and this, I think it's really just because we're very inexperienced, but in playing our D&D campaign, we have to constantly stop to see, like, well, what's the check on that? Like, what's your proficiency bonus? Like, what's your attack bonus?
You guys are literally going to drive Tim insane.
I know. Our battles take so long. But that's because we're playing with very inexperienced players who, like, we aren't all looking at the same format of character sheets. So as much as we try to help each other, it's still something that we're all kind of learning. So that, for me, really slows us down. It's clunky. If it's not my turn, I'm probably, like, not super paying attention unless, you know. If I were listening to that as a podcast, which is basically like the first five episodes of The Adventure Zone, that's not super juicy for me. But this, like,
active that's role basically play, I mean, way later in The Adventure Zone too, whenever Clint had to do anything, let's be honest. But
basically, like when you have to stop and talk about the mechanics of the game, like the operations of it, it takes away from the action and it cuts out the pacing of it. And I think it feels better to me, just because it's like a spoonful of sugar with my medicine with the Fate system, is because it's not a negotiation, and it's also not like core game mechanics and like you rolled a 3+5 bonus, you know, like it's just kind of straight up and down role play. At least that's what it seems like. It's like this system that Griffin is using right now seems to be like a middle-ish ground between what Fate was doing and what D&D was doing. Probably more on the Fate side, you know, but I didn't notice the clunkiness of Fate, and I definitely didn't notice the clunkiness of the numbers in D&D with this one.
Are we talking about, this is Powered by the Apocalypse, right?
Yes.
And then the Commitment was Fate system, right?
Yes. Okay. Well, so I think they're both technically Powered by the Apocalypse in that they utilize 2d6, but I consider them as different only because the Fate system requires you to do, like, something happens because of what you do, like a reaction or like a condition, like an attribute that you're giving someone. Like, if I'm going to use a fire attack, now you have this attribute and it's a burned attribute and it has such and such factors. Whereas this one is, you rolled an 8. That means you're going to succeed in what you do, but you're also, like, something bad is going to happen, maybe, you know, that sort of thing. Where it's kind of, it's a negotiation, but it's not a, like, rigid sort of thing that is harder for me to follow. It feels more fluid this time around with this system.
Gotcha. I thought it was really funny how the mama had that compact mirror that transported them to Sylvain. And the funny thing is that it seems like magical compact mirrors are a recurring trope in Griffin's fiction. Like, how much Sailor Moon did you watch exactly as a kid, Griffin? Because I'm into it.
Go ahead. Oh, I was just going to quickly mention, in the latest Mabim Bam, Justin was talking about he and Charlie were watching Sailor Moon Crystal. And I just wanted to say, like, Charlie, like, the whole... The reason why he brought it up was because Charlie, and he doesn't know where Charlie is Justin's daughter. He doesn't know where Charlie picked this up, but Charlie just, like, loudly proclaimed to him, subs, not dubs. And Charlie's like 3 or 4, and Justin was just like,
That's hilarious. What?
McElroy's, they're raising their kids right, I guess.
Oh, Lord. I hated Crystal. I'm yeah, sorry, me too. Let's, everyone we'll unpack listening. That later.
just take comfort in knowing that I 100% agree.
Okay, cool. We'll get to that later. I also thought one thing that cracks me up about Griffin's fiction and mm-hmm. tropes that recur in it is he's like, seems like he's a sucker for this trope where it's like, someone will be talking to the main characters about, like, how'd you do this really special thing that no one should be able to do? Like, Trace Horny Boys overcoming the thrall and our new three main characters being able to see the gate to Sylvain. And it's one of those things where it's, like, it's a very cliched and indulgent trope, but, like, I eat it the fuck up every time. It's really good.
Basically, it's how the protagonists know that they are the protagonists, because people say, hey, you're special. You're doing something, yeah.
Feels good, man.
It does. Real quick, I do want to talk about each of the characters, just because I like that we check in with them every episode. Mm-hmm. Starting off with Ned. Ned rolled his first pair of dice, and he rolled a good solid 11. So maybe Clint's dice rolling will be more successful than he might have had when he was Merle.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I thought it was a neat visual that I was worried how Ned was going to engage in fights because he's really good at driving. But I'm like, what is he going to do, drive over things? But that's exactly what he did. He participated in that fight by driving into the bobcat. So, yeah.
It's difficult for me to imagine Clint engaging in any like serious romantic role play. But don't you think Ned and Barclay would be kind of a cute couple?
I think so.
From the very little I've seen of them, but, like, that whole, like, scene I thought was really cute. And I was kind of like, I could get into that.
I'd like to see them interact when they aren't being, like, assaulted by something, or when they aren't, like, panicking because the abomination is around. Like, I'd like to see them and how they interact when the world isn't falling apart.
That's when people bond, Chelsea. Those are the key bonding moments in this kind of fiction.
You got a point there. I really like Aubrey and how she is just like Zippo lighting her way through the forest with Mama when they're walking through the woods.
That was cute, yeah.
That was so cute. And I think if I had fiery powers and if I had just uncovered them for the first time, I would definitely be doing the same thing. So I like
that. Yeah,
that
was something.
Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Okay, thanks. I like the way that Travis is playing Aubrey, just because she's, like, really exuberant and kind of fun and really bubbly. And for me, that's kind of, like, who Travis is, or at least that's how he tweets a lot of the time, is he's really positive, and he's really supportive of, like, others. And he's just really, it's fun to follow him just because so much of what he says is super positive and it just brightens your day. So for me, Aubrey is like, yeah, that is super, super Travis.
Can we assume that Travis thinks Laura Dern is hot because he asked if Danny looked like her? Because that is super not how I was picturing Danny, but...
same. The prime Dern, that made me crack up. I love that.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I do, like, Jurassic Park is a beloved childhood film, so.
I had this.
I liked her in the new Star Wars, too.
I
that character design
her.
Was really good.
I also
good.
Loved the new Star Wars, but we can also unpack that later.
It was so good. I really liked it.
I liked it, too. I thought when they mentioned Laura Dern, it made me think of American Horror Story, and then I had, like, a kind of chuckle to myself, because these four boys, like, doing all these mini-arcs and making new characters and having different roles and things is basically American Horror Story, because that's kind of what they do, too, is they take the same bunch of characters, or the same bunch of actors, and they recast them as different characters from season to season, and there's one mystery that, like, unfolds every season, and that's, I thought it was kind of funny, because I was like, Laura Dern, in American Horror Story.
I didn't know that. I don't know anything about that show.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's fun.
It looks fun. I was curious about it.
Yeah.
All right, Duck.
Duck. Oh, God, Duck. I love his neutral temperament and how, like, all of this weird shit is going on, and he's just kind of like, yep, okay, well, I think if I was a ranger, I would like to think I would be that way too and just really calm. I know I wouldn't be, but that's something I would like aspire to be, is just be very calm and just be very calm and collected as disaster is occurring.
Yeah, I mean, it would certainly, it makes him a very reassuring presence.
Yeah, yeah. He's just so unfazed, I guess, because of a lifetime of being the Chosen. He's just like, well, okay, it's happening again.
It's funny because the way Griffin got around the problem of Duck being the Chosen is just like all three of these characters are some kind of Chosen ones, obviously, because they all saw the gate.
I'm not sure. Oh, sorry. I just wanted to real quick mention, Aubrey was able to see the gate, right?
Yes.
I don't know in fiction how she was able to see the gate. And that could just be me being nitpicky, and maybe Mama like mentioned it and I just didn't notice. Because maybe that's all you have to do, is you have to say the gate. And people are like, oh, okay, there's the gate. I guess, maybe.
I thought that was like the whole big reveal plot point is like Mama going, I don't understand how you guys can see the gate when you're not supposed to be able to.
Well, yeah. But then until that point, like, Ned wasn't able to see the gate until Mama pointed out that, hey, you can see the gate? And then he was like, oh, hey, a gate.
But yeah, that was weird. I think that scene was a little bit confusing, and it wasn't clear, like, who saw what and who knew what at what points.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, because I think Travis, like, Aubrey just said, like, oh, you mean the Stonehenge thing? And then, like, it felt like Griffin just went with it, but I think that was what was supposed to happen.
Yeah.
Like, I think if she hadn't just said that, then Griffin would have said, like, by the way, you can see the gate even though you're not supposed to.
Yeah.
That's the sense that I got, anyway.
Yeah. I'm going to go with that because I like that it happened in fiction. Instead of having to, like, say, oh, and there it is, you know?
Yeah, they rolled with Ned having gone to the lodge before, too.
Yeah, and that worked out really well. The Monte Cristo made me also really want a Monte Cristo.
I don't know what a Monte Cristo
is. Oh, it's like a toasted sandwich, yeah.
Oh, that sounds fucking good. You're right. I want that too. I'm going to go to Costco after this. That's not directly related, actually. Never mind.
I was about to say, if you wanted a good Monte Cristo, I hear they have some really good ones at the Amnesty Inn in Kepler, West Virginia.
Oh, okay. I'll just drive over there.
No big deal.
Real quick.
I think that's it for...
Okay,
that's it for my notes. Did you have anything else that you wanted to say?
Nope. That's it. Hit it all.
Cool, cool, cool.
Oh, Vincent sounded like Jenkins.
Oh, I wrote that down! I wrote that down, too! I don't know how Griffin does that voice, but as soon as he does, I just envision, like, these big cheeks. Like
I know, it's a really gross voice.
Like, in Corpse Bride, how there is that butler guy who has, these enormous cheeks, and he has, like...
Jowls. Yeah. I haven't seen that movie since it was out in theaters.
Jowls.
I barely remember it.
Like from a bulldog, just like these big old cheeks. Because you have to have these big cheeks to make that voice. I love Jenkins' voice, so I'm glad that there's who has Jenkins' voice.
I think I love it on Jenkins just because I love Jenkins, but outside of that context, it's like, oh, Griffin.
Do you
please.
Love it on this Vincent the Goat Man?
No.
I think we'll come to love it, I think.
Hopefully.
Okay. Rachel, how can people find us?
Well, if you want to get in contact with us, you can find us at taztalk.tumblr.com, or you can send us an email at taztalkpodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can tweet us. We are at taztalkpodcast on Twitter.
Cool. All right. That's it for this week. Then we got episode 4 coming up soon.
We're going to see the big climax of the big fight.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, and I guess we'll get more answers about Sylvain and what the abominations are.
I'm excited.
Me too.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.